Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and good afternoon, and welcome to the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force. I want to thank you all for your time today. I know we only have an hour, and we have quite a bit to cover, so I will call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Christina Caraballo.
Present.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Stephen Lee.
Good afternoon.
Tom McDonald.
Here.
Brett Oliver.
Here.
Ken Kawamoto. Do we have Ken on the line? Not yet. Valerie Gray.
Here.
Thank you. Laura Heerman Langford.
Here.
Leslie Hall.
Yes, Leslie Kelly Hall's here. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Beaven. Nancy's not on the line yet. Kim Nolan. I believe I heard Kim dial in earlier. Kim, are you on the line? Rich Elmore.
Here, and Kim said she was in an airport, but she was on the line.
Thank you. Eric Helfen.
Yes, Eric Heflin's here.
Dan Freeman.
Hello, I'm here.
Okay. Mike Peretta.
Here.
And Rob Hepte.
Here.
Okay. And with that, Christina, I will turn it over to you.
Sounds great. Thanks. Well, thank you all for joining today. Before we get started, we just wanted to give you guys a couple quick highlights from a debrief we had with Steve Posnack earlier this week that I think will help us kind of to streamline our task at hand and provide more clarity to the task force as we provide recommendations that are needed at this stage in the game for ONC. One of the things, the biggest things that we wanted to relay to the group is that we're looking here at really defining what is that minimum set of data that's needed on a national scale to help make interoperability work by the most stakeholders. So as we were talking to Steve, kind of went through that this is the US CDI is ONC's next phase in how we're going to progress data as a result of industry feedback post the 2015 edition. And there's been a lot of feedback that data is not there when it's needed and there's often missing pieces. So there's been also a recognition that in order to address this, we need to expand the TEFCA and look at data that would be exchangeable, agnostic of the exchange process. So the US CDI is really intended to be a very transparent mechanism to really give industry a heads up about what's coming in the future. It's a more of a progression process and needs to be framed even where we have red flags to know what we need to build today or more quickly. And so our task force should keep this in mind as we consider how we're going to do our expansion process. So before we move on to the actual data classes that we should consider, we really need to focus our attention on bringing in a good framework and process to evaluate them. So that said, we really are just at the beginning here, but this is kind of our little 8-week sprint to really set that foundation. Steve reminded us as we kind of want to go into different areas that there's a lot of more work to be done before V1 of the US CDI is going to be published. And as part of our high-tech kickoff, there was a section in the CURES that pointed to defining use cases and prioritization and associated standards, which will be a whole nother separate task force coming down the pike soon. So a lot of the homework we did, I think it has really helped us to define, begin to see the broad ecosystem that exists. We had, I think, quite a few pages on defining the stakeholders. And we intend to kind of put those in what we're calling our parking lot, so that we can use it in the future. We've also realized in discussion that we need to take, we want to move on to kind of our next charge, which is in this meeting, which is to actually look at, the actual categories, I've got it in front of me, the proposed categories to which data classes would be promoted and objective characteristics for proposal, for promotion. So as we work through this, some key things I want the task force, Terry and I were talking about, to think about are, what's that minimum national data set need? How do we group and decide between these data classes? How does data actually get on our list? How should ONC incorporate public comment? And how do we as an industry really want to engage as ONC manages the USCDI? What has made this data so important that it needs to be in this floor where we said this is the data that just has to be available? And how does something get into the USCDI? ONC is looking at emerging and the candidate classes and really wants to hold industry accountable for what those are. So it's up to us to have a voice and build this framework so that we can start looking at the gaps and what's needed. What are the criteria and characteristics to signal that ONC is ready to move the data classes to the next stage? What would something move? When would it move from emerging to candidate? So these timelines. What are the key threshold questions that we should ask along the process? And then constantly thinking about what the receiving entity would want if they were to query. So that's kind of a recap of our conversation with Steve and where we think we should kind of pivot the task force. Before we move on to actually diving into the meeting topics, Terry, did you have anything that you wanted to add to that?
Thanks, Christina. That's great. Only two things. One, the homework was extraordinarily helpful, and you guys thought long and hard about who ought to be stakeholders and domains that have a voice or should have a voice in proposing data classes. And as Christina said, those are going to go in the parking lot and someone else will find it very useful to drive out there and see what's parked. We're going to get on to the job of defining the criteria, of identifying the criteria in order to prioritize data classes to get through the process, as Christina said. And in order to define our criteria, we're actually going to have to prioritize our priority criteria. So that's going to be our work for the next call or two. Thanks, Christina.
Yep. So I guess we can go ahead and move on to our actual, I can go back one more slide. Well, you know what? I actually think we've talked about all of this, so we're good. Just I wanted to point out again to think about how we're going to progress from this broad scale identification or the merging data classes to those ready for nationwide scalability, looking at how we balance that quantitative, qualitative, and technical criteria, considering that all expansive, all of the above set of criteria versus a small core set, and then looking at inclusivity, practicality, and I'm tongue-twisted today. So one other thing I wanted to point out is that the USCDI is that floor where we're saying all of this data is what is needed for national broad exchange. We have talked about, and I think many people have brought it up, there will be like dotted lines to the interoperability standards advisory, which is has that full document of all available data standards. So we're kind of looking at that and how we take what we're putting in the emerging buckets and have links back and forth as well. So I think we can move on to the next slide. So we can actually move on to the next slide because we have all of them bucketed here. Here's our prioritization criteria. And actually, Terry laid this out beautifully for us, bucketing in the main overarching things that we should look at, which are the characteristics of the data classes, the characteristics of the stakeholder, characteristics of data management process, characteristics of the domain, and characteristics of the subject population. And we went ahead and put a first round brain dump on this list to get us started with the discussion amongst the task force.
So Christina, let me ask, so if we're going to start rolling, let me ask the task force sort of the first question. Any comments on these data, on the prioritization categories? If we go back one slide, which just breaks out the categories, the question is, are there others? Is this a reasonable way of doing it? Should we have a different set of sort of buckets for our prioritization categories? And any thoughts, all thoughts, this list is essentially a distillation of everything that you all wrote in your comments, or hopefully everything.
This is Clem. I think some of them are a bit intermingled, or they could be entangled.
Christina and Terry, just want to make sure we're acknowledging the members with their hands raised. I saw Kim with her hand raised first. I don't know, Kim, if you no longer have a question or a comment, but I see Laura's first.
Hi, this is Kim. Sorry, I'm in an airport, so I hope it's not too loud. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. I was raising my hand on the next slide with a couple of comments that I wanted to make on those. So if you want me to wait till we get to that slide, I can.
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay. So some of the things when I went back and I listened to the recording and then went through all the homework documents and everything, when I looked at the characteristics of the data class, some of the things that stood out to me is in the draft document, it has like whether it's in FHIR or in the consolidated CDA, but it really doesn't talk about if it's structured, like with a vocabulary, and or if it's like a text. So I was wondering if that could be a characteristic of the data class, because if it's really high value and high importance, even if it's unstructured, we may want to figure out a way to get it more structured. Like I was looking at the goals and the assessment and plan of treatments. I'm not familiar with those being structured and having a clear vocabulary, but I'm not closely attached to those either. So I may just not know about it or like health concerns. So I think knowing if it has a vocabulary and if it's structured, that would be a good characteristic. Then for the stakeholders, I think one group that's missing is life sciences or pharmaceuticals. So I would ask that be added into it. And I'm sorry, I did not understand the characteristics of the domain, so I was wondering if somebody could explain that to us to make sure we're looking at it the right way. And I'll pause and go on mute so I'm not, they have a lot of background noise.
Thanks, Kim. I'll take that one since I was the one who made these very arbitrary buckets. It's just to get a sense of just overall all of the different domains, the stakeholders. We probably had about 40 that you all came up with. And then the question is, so how do we tell them apart? And is there any characteristics about these 40 potential sources of data classes that we might want to consider as a prioritization criteria? And so I came up with, you know, there's a high volume of patients, or it affects a high volume, it affects a lot of money, or it's a sector that has a lot of failures and that we really need to address. So that's where those arbitrary categories came.
So would it be like a risk stratification tool to use, or?
Hadn't thought of it so much as a risk stratification tool as it is a potential criteria that we might use to advance one data class over another. So if a data class addressed the needs of a domain that had a high volume, accounted for a big chunk of healthcare dollars, didn't seem to be doing very well, that we might, if we chose those as criteria to advance that data class, we might say, okay, it checks off three of those boxes. So it's really, you know, do we want any of these to be on a list of how we decide what data classes we want to advance along the ONC pathway?
Okay, I think I understand that now. And one other thing with the data classes, will there be like some kind of hierarchy with them, like demographics, where you have the patient name, date of birth, gender, sex, preferred language, race, ethnicity, like you have a demographics and all of those things fall underneath that? Or would we have like very specific data classes like patient name, but it's really part of a demographic, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I hear. I think Kim, what we're going to do on the first several rounds is we're not going to worry about exactly what's in the data classes, and instead worry about how we're going to choose among them. And you already raised a couple of potential criteria, like the fact that there's a standardized vocabulary, even if there's not, semantic standards that, or structure around the information. So the questions you raise are going to be important at some point, but that some point is sort of down the road. And our next task is really to figure out how are we going to rank order? How are we going to justify one of us saying that this is the most important data class in the world? So how would I justify that to you in a way that made sense? That's sort of the perspective we're taking on this.
Terry, this is Lauren. I see we have several other members with comments. Should we go to Laura next?
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you. I can be quick because this is Laura, and thank you. I kind of had the same issue that I think Clem had, that they weren't terribly exclusive of each other, but I think I can deal with that grayness. And I also was very confused by the characteristics of the domain, but the discussion just passed helped with that. I think it'll still clarify as time goes on, but I just wasn't sure what kind of mindset I was supposed to have when you say the word domain, but I think I'm getting it now. So thank you very much.
I'm glad to hear that. Okay. So Clem, I guess, is that? Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of things. I don't think you've distinguished between these domains, these dimensions well enough, and I think you need an example or two. I mean, I think that class and the domain are pretty convolved, as well as stakeholders. So if you call the class, say, pharmacy, well, then the stakeholders will be the pharmacists and the clinicians. I mean, so I think there's too many dimensions, frankly, and we should be sharper in the distinctions. We'll trip all over ourselves. And then also, I don't think we should be talking about patient registration data because that's done as far as I understand. I mean, we should be, this is talking about the next step, right? Please get that clear.
So Clem, let me ask a clarifying question. So you would suggest that we identify, say, a group, a class of stakeholders for want of another term, let's say a class of stakeholders or a class of domains that, and you gave pharmacy as an example, and then there would be stakeholders older.
I'm only saying they overlap a lot, so we got, and there's no examples here to be sure.
Yeah.
You know what you're really talking about. So if you say medicines, well, lots of stakeholders can be interested in them. And is that farm? What's the domain? I mean, what's the difference between a class of content and a domain?
Well, that's the lack of clarity. I see. We've been using domain and stakeholder sort of interchangeably to identify groups of entities or individuals who have a reason to want a data class advanced because it is of high value to them. So we're just trying to identify who's got a reasonable voice to put forward data classes. So there's nothing fancier than that. It's just a list of all the potential.
You've got both stakeholder and domain as separate too, and I thought I just heard you combining them.
Okay, that's a good thought. That's a good idea. I mean, this is a work in progress, so thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think of domain as being the kind of data, and the data classes are the kind of data, because data can have high volume and high cost and high failure rates, and data classes can be important and can have ease of standardization. So I think the stakeholders clear-ish, although they'll be over, you know, same people. But I don't know if no one else has trouble with that. I'll just go, I don't care. I mean, I'll be quiet.
No, thanks for the comment. We're going to keep rolling ahead, and we'll circle back, I think.
Yeah. I think, Valerie, you're next with your hand up.
Oh, great. Thanks. I had just one question and then a comment. Under the characteristics of the stakeholder, the bullet that talks about contributes to a valued health outcome, is that the bullet that would apply to community-based organizations and some of the sort of maybe non-traditional clinical providers that are more and more part of the care teams going forward?
That was my thinking, yes.
Okay.
That's an example. Yeah. What we're trying to do is to get away from sort of the first character, the first bucket of what the data class looks like, because a lot of the really mature data classes are there for a pretty restricted group of, although important group of users. Now, so the meaningful use eligible provider group as the poster child, and to get to the folks that really haven't been part of that process and don't have a mature set of data standards, but they contribute to an important outcome.
Okay.
So it's just a way to get them in the queue.
Yeah. No, I think that's extremely important, and it's definitely a direction a lot of, I think, the HIEs are headed in. And then I understand a lot of the conversation about different overlaps, but, you know, when I took a look at the data management process, I wondered if, in addition to cost and availability, do we need to think about the quality of the data? Or maybe that's sort of captured in the characteristics of the data class. But I just know from experience here in New York, you know, we've got a lot of data coming into the HIE. You know, it's in a standard format, but oftentimes we have issues with the quality of the data. And, you know, it is, in my opinion, it's become a really important part of the mix when we determine our priorities here. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an area that's really important to capture. Rob?
Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead?
Sure. Excuse me. I think Valerie just touched on the area that I was going to look at, which is the overwhelming feedback, the overwhelming early feedback that we've heard is that many current exchanges are nervous that these requirements are going to completely disrupt existing business models. And so I thought it was important that somewhere in here, as far as stakeholders and other people we mentioned here, that we give currently exchanged data some kind of priority. So I know we mentioned data that's currently being collected as a characteristic of the class. I know we mentioned availability, the data management process. But if there are things that are already being actively exchanged, I think it would go a long way to giving, you know, that community a voice here if we gave some priority to those things that develop organically. If the market is speaking and people are able to collect and exchange data and find value in it, we ought to look there and recognize it, I think. And so between that and one way or another formally looking towards existing health information exchanges as a stakeholder to make sure that voice is heard, I think would go a long way towards smoothing the implementation and the maturing of this system and the tech in general.
Yep. So, Rob, that's an excellent point. And I'd like to, it would be great to know where you'd kind of put that. One of the things that we were trying to, well, we want to make it really clear that it's, you know, there's lots of voices saying, I need this, and this is the most important thing to me to make interoperability work. But the goal here is to identify what is our task at hand is that how do we get the data that's needed at the national level for the most people and where are those gaps? So how do we put that, what you were just saying, into the criteria for us to evaluate so that we can, ONC can look at this and look at the emerging data classes and say what's got the most traction, what has the most points, so that we can say that's the next thing that's ready and it's going to impact the most stakeholders. And as we go through this, we've also talked in the side about maybe how some of these things will be weighted or how we're looking at it. But I think it's really important right now to capture exactly what you just said. So if we can look at where in the framework we would put that, it would be helpful.
I think here's the way it's starting to collect in my mind, right? Emerging data classes, I think, are more about need and value, right? That's where we look and say somebody wants this, somebody needs this, it impacts a high cost or some of the other criteria, right? High volume domain. For promotion from emerging to candidate is where we have to start looking at reality, right? And that's where some of the stuff that Valerie touched on I think is important. That's the time, I think, where we need to ask the exchange community, okay, we think we want this. It's an emerging data class. People want it. Can we do it? And so I think there's a, I don't know what we want to call it, a subtask force or a survey we do to ask the current exchange community to say, what are those criteria you look at, right? So we can say, are there mature standards? But Valerie just brought up a great point. Are those mature standards actually implemented in a uniform way? And so there may be that second level that we need to look at when we get to candidate status and think about promotion from candidate to the CDI itself, where we say, okay, can we really exchange this? Are the standards well implemented? Is the vocabulary well established and widely used, et cetera? Does that make sense?
Yes, and we've got a lot of hands up, so I'm going to move on to Daniel. You're up next.
Okay, thanks. I'll just echo other comments saying that I, too, have been confused by the domain label. I think part of it is we're not all referencing a common information model, so it's tricky. I think the characteristics are fine. I just don't know if I would label that as a domain or not. But So I'll leave that aside and move to sort of the idea about the data class. Two thoughts there for these characteristics. The first is I think it would be helpful to have a characteristic around that describes the breadth of content captured or intended to be captured by this class. And going along with that, sort of the precision of the definition of the class. And one of the things I struggle with is you have like little itty bitty things, which essentially like a data class is like really ultimately one variable, you know. And then you have others where it's like the entire domain of all laboratory tests. And those are like, it's like completely different scales of complexity. And it relates to this ease of standardization, but I think sort of more precise honing of like being able to precisely define what goes in that class and how wide is the scope of it would be useful for distinguishing and prioritizing.
Yeah, Bob, this is Terry. So do you think there's a criterion or two buried in what you just said around data classes? Now, is it a good thing to be narrow or a good thing to be broad? And is it sort of the next level down that it's a good thing to be structured or unstructured? Is it a good thing to be tied to standards or standardized vocabulary and, you know, so on down the layers? And there may be multiple layers, but is that sort of where you're heading?
Well, I think it's useful to like lay it out and say that these are characteristics. So it's combined with the other dimensions as to whether you would think it's a good thing or not, right? So lots of small things that are easy to standardize, okay, we might want to do that. Only one thing, but gosh, it's really hard, maybe we set that aside. So it's more like a descriptor that is a characteristic upon which you would make your overall assessment to prioritize up or down.
Yeah, great. That's very helpful.
Eric, go ahead.
Thank you. So just a couple of very quick comments. One is really from the Sequoia perspective, one of the things we are looking at is the testability of given criteria. And many of these strike me as being very difficult to test. Really think this should be use case driven. And so one of my hopes is that the criteria are actually not really decided, you know, through these series of meetings so much as we have an initial overall process defined, an initial attempt to define the criteria and the data sets and ecosystems and so on, but that the actual work is done really facilitated by, say, the RCE, and it includes broad stakeholder prioritization and feedback, and that ultimately that results in this being driven by use cases, which I think you were mentioned earlier in this call. And I believe that's critically important so that this is actually not a technology-based process. It's actually a process by which we have a list of broadly vetted and prioritized use cases, which then drive everything else, and not the other way around. Otherwise, we can get in a situation by which we don't know if we've got it right or not, because we have no way of judging our work in this task force. And then the final criteria, I'd like to suggest, and this is implied but not stated, I believe, is that there's actually a curation of the value set that we can point to. And in many cases where that curation exists, such as IHE or HL7 or other standards bodies, the standard body itself has, in some cases, their own assessment process where they determine the maturity of the associated data. And I wanted to also thank one of our Sequoia staff members, Dee Davis, who is a real driver of really national, international content standards, who really contribute a lot of the feedback we've been providing. That's it.
Thank you, Eric. I think moving on to our next commenter. Stephen, go ahead.
Yeah. So I had a suggestion under the characteristics of the subject population. We didn't capture underserved. And while I think most underserved populations are high risk, it might be worth calling that out independently. I also wanted to ask Terry to say a little bit more about what you mean by characteristics of the data management process. We've discussed some of the other categories, but I don't quite get what you're after there or what you've included.
Yeah, okay. Remember, this was an initial stab late at night to get some of these categories in, so I'm not wedded to any of them. But for the character, I was just trying to get at the point of, you know, some data classes are easier to get than others for a variety of reasons, and some are part of workflows, some aren't. Some, you know, are very specialized, some are not. So it's really to get a sense of, you know, is there any criteria buried in the process needed to pull that nugget out and send it along? You know, is there anything in the criteria? Should we have a criteria that bears on that part of the process? Or is it so much part of all the other pieces that we can just ignore it?
So when you say availability and cost, you're referring to the availability of the data and the cost of getting at it. Is that right?
Right, correct.
Okay, yeah, that was what I just wasn't understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, and that may not have, you know, that may be buried under the characteristics of the data class and not need to be broken out. But the shortest subclass, so I'm happy to drop it.
Leslie?
Yes, thank you. So I think wherever we capture perhaps in the data management process, usability might be a good criteria to help determine whether that data is ready to move to the candidate status. And I also, back to our very original message and mantra, we talk about parity and that all things are equal for stakeholders. So I want to make sure we have a way to make sure when we're talking about cost, we're not just talking about cost of the health system. If a patient is involved, perhaps it's a very high cost to them. So making sure that our characteristics of any decision making goes back to the principles of parity so that we have a way to continue to evaluate given the patient's voice and not just the overall health system in general. And then I thought that there's nothing here about urgency of data, of the data class. And I think that could help us to understand that this is something that needs to be done right now as decisions are being made, or is this something that is for historical review? But some sense of urgency included in our characteristics. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Leslie. And we have a lot of hands up, so we'll kind of ingest a lot of the comments later and circulate to the task force. But Kim, you're next.
Yeah, I was just looking through my notes, and one other thing that I had put on for maybe a characteristic of the data class was if it was part of the current EHR certification process, because that may help us in understanding how widely it's already implemented. And then I just wanted to agree with what Valerie said about the data quality and what Dan mentioned about the different classes. That's kind of what I was trying to get to with the demographics. Like, we have specific things that are demographics, but when you look at medications, labs, procedures, you can go much granular within those buckets. So that's why I was asking about that hierarchy. And I think that's it. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kim. Clem?
Yeah, well, there's two or three things. One of them, I think the quality will get better if we, you know, insist on sort of cleaner standardization. Because a lot of stuff, the problem is they don't have the codes in them. They're not lined up. But I'd like to, maybe not challenge, but just get some examples of, because I kind of hear the thread that we really should be looking at stuff that's not wanted by the healthcare system so much. But I'd like to, who doesn't want drugs? I mean, tell me what, I'm not talking of drug abuse, but what community, whether they're patients or their community health centers or whatever, doesn't want information about drugs? I mean, I think we may be please give me some counterexamples. I think the same will be true for x-ray tests and other kinds of tests. If you're a patient, you want to know it. If you're, you know, a disadvantaged person, somebody around you needs to know it. So tell me if I'm wrong on that.
So, Clem, this is Terry. So sort of an example might be from the home and community-based services end of things, which is not so much medical as it is dealing with function and filling in gaps between what the environment requires of an individual and what the individual is able to do on their own. So they probably don't really need to know what your medication list is unless they're part of a process to be surveillance for that. They're more about having a change in function, a change in living situation. So their data needs are important. And the reason this group is important is that for the high-risk, high-cost elderly patients who drive about 50% of the Medicare healthcare dollar, these services are critical to keeping them at home and out of the rest of the healthcare system. So there's an example of that.
Well,
I don't want radiology report.
No, I don't disagree that there are other items that are valued, but if someone's worried about someone's homebound and they're falling down, it may be because of their medication. So, I think this separation, it's almost like prejudicial. There's these two different categories, and they compete with each other. They all need all of it, my opinion.
So what criteria would you like to put forward?
Well, a practicality, because I mean, you know, we're going to be trying to drink the ocean or boil the ocean, and we're not going to get it all done. I've been working on this for 20 years, and we haven't gotten that much done yet. So I think we got to really pick things that we can get done in somebody's lifetime, and be careful about the things that require remodeling the whole system, and tackle the things that are sort of low-hanging fruit or lower-hanging fruits, not to exclude the other ones. But realize you can get more bang for the buck sooner if we tackle stuff that's kind of half-baked and we just got to get it finally cooked. And there is a big problem of remodeling the system. I hope you all know that. If you get everybody to behave differently, to put in new kinds of data, that'll take a while. And it's okay to go for it. It's just not going to be as immediate.
Okay.
Thank you, Clem. Terry, did you have something?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the next comment. Nancy? Nancy, we can't hear you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and... Oh, there you go.
Sorry, that's me, Lauren. I was just going to say maybe we could go to Leslie and then come back to Nancy.
Yep. Leslie?
Thanks. I'd like to echo Kim's earlier comments about the narrative and making sure that we don't standardize that out, because the narrative is so important, and making sure that that's part of the criteria. We don't want to eliminate things because they only meet very specific conditions. And then also, based on Clem's comment, perhaps in our structure, we have classifications that understands that we're not going to do the emerging today, but we are going to consider an emerging area to keep that list going, whether it's a parking lot list or we choose one per year, so that we're not always only looking at the here and now, but have an opportunity for a process to include emerging including things like patient-generated health data, which today would not meet any of these criteria, yet could be very, very important to efficiencies in healthcare. Thank you.
Lauren, I don't see any more. Oh, Eric.
Just one final brief comment to elaborate is that one criteria I think needs to also include the fact that data is not static. You know, value sets are far from static, and they change frequently. And so one criteria I think should include that there be not only criteria for selecting, but also for the broader process, there needs to be some type of a mechanism for acknowledging the data, the value sets, and the code systems as they evolve over time. Thank you.
Lauren, did we need to move to a public comment now, or do we have time for some more discussion?
Yes, we have about 5 minutes left of discussion, if you have additional slides. And we'll go to public comment. If there's no public comments, we can certainly use the last 5 minutes for additional discussion.
Okay. Terry, did you have anything that you wanted to bring up? I don't see any more hands up.
No, I think that was a great discussion. Were there people who didn't say anything that we should call on for their comments? Okay.
Terry, is anyone able to hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great.
Thank you.
We
forgot to come back to you, didn't we?
That's okay. I was very struggling with my audio. I just wanted to add a little bit to the conversation of the data integrity and data quality and just maybe add the word data completeness. And as we continue to exchange data with the CCDA and we get lots of good structured data and we know a lot about problems in meds and labs and but being able to put that together with the SOAP note, and I know others have mentioned this early on, but that somewhat unstructured data and being able to get a complete medical record in the exchange of data is really, really critical to folks like payers and providers that are trying to do continuity of care. So I just wanted to add that concept a little bit to the whole concept of data quality and data integrity. But today we don't ever, for the most part, don't get a complete medical record. And that's really, from my perspective, what we need to hopefully be striving for.
And Christina, this is Lauren. I didn't realize that we had planned the public comment at 4:20, so maybe we can stop for public comment now, and then I see you have an additional agenda item, if that works.
Sounds good.
Okay. Operator, could you please open the line for public comments?
Sure. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and the confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And just as a reminder, we'd like to ask everyone to keep their comments to no longer than 3 minutes. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue?
Yes, we do. Our first comment is coming from Robert Heiselman.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I just want to comment that I think the work that you're doing is excellent. It's much needed. I wear two hats in my organization. I see patients half-time, and I'm also a clinical informaticist. So, I kind of crashed your party and invited myself, but I would certainly be willing to attempt to bring a clinical point of view to the conversation. And I've included some of my comments in the chat and public comments. So thank you for having me. I think it's important to have members of the public involved in your process. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another comment?
Yes, we have another comment coming from Larry Wolf.
Go ahead, please.
Hi, it's Larry Wolf. I'm Chief Transformation Officer at Matrix Care, and wanted to let you know that, you know, the world, at least some of the world, is listening in on these deliberations, and I'm really glad to see the depth of conversation about what the criteria should be around the data elements. I think that the approach ONC's taken to identify what's currently in play, building on the meaningful use certification criteria, and then taking that forward and giving a long window of heads up of things in consideration is a very effective way to start to engage industry, start to engage the vendors and providers in advance of things being locked down. I'm particularly interested in where you wind up taking the provenance piece, which is sort of right on the cusp of an addition that's being proposed in this next round of capabilities. I think it's both a very important area that we should start to move forward on and could see where it could present some challenges as well. So thanks for the good work and looking forward to seeing it continue.
Thank you, Larry. Operator, do we have another comment in the queue?
No additional comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. Christina, I will turn it over back to you.
Okay, great, thanks. I guess we can go ahead and go to the next slide. For those on the task force attending HIMSS next week, Rob Hafse has reserved a conference room for us to convene in that holds, I believe, about 20 people. So all task force members are welcome to come join us in that meeting space. And we will circulate that.
Will there be a dial-in? Because I won't be at there at the HIMSS.
Yeah, everything else will remain the same. We just realized that we needed a quiet place and didn't want to cancel next week's meeting, so Rob kindly offered us a space at the HIMSS conference for those of us to escape the madness of the floor that will be there.
Okay,
all else is normal. So if we don't have anything from anybody else that anybody would like to add, I think we can move on to the next slide. Did we have another? We actually do not have we have some reference materials, the very last slide that we wanted to put on people's radar. But I do not think we have anything else now, unless Terry, you want to add anything. We'll be chatting and circulating some more homework for next week's call, probably within the next day or two.
Yeah, and so I think the homework, just a spoiler alert, is going to be to probably take slide 5 or whatever the prioritization criteria and ask you to look at them with a perspective of what of these criteria would I use to justify my claim that my data class is the most important data class in the world? So think about ONC getting 10,000 comments on what's the most important next piece of data to be around and how we can help them plow through their 10,000 comments. That'll be the context in which we ask you to go through the prioritization criteria.
So, Terry, is there any thought about balancing multiple criteria? I mean, you're going to have criteria, but which one wins or which trumps what? Any thoughts about that?
We're waiting for all your thoughts. Yeah, so propose it. It's going to be a very interesting process. I have no idea how we're going to come out.
Exactly. And if this is, I was just going to say, if we're going about this the wrong way now, then I think we can also reset. We'd love comments. Feel free to send emails of how we should go about creating this framework. It's really, we're at the very beginning stages, so we can shift what we're doing. And I think we're very open and flexible to be able to do that.
Have you,
so
have
even
you
if we need different buckets.
So sorry, what was that? This is Lauren. Just wanted to acknowledge. I know we have one more comment, it looks like, from Leslie. So just wanted to make sure we acknowledge that before we adjourn, since we still have a couple minutes left.
Oh, I sent it in the comment to Adam, so I think I'm set. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Christina, go ahead.
One little one is that I don't know if everyone is aware of what the current state is. You know, what the thing was presented as in what's new, and I heard stuff discussed, which is pretty far along already. Is there some value in just sort of presenting what you think is kind of fairly well along?
Yeah, interesting thought. Absolutely. Add it to the queue. Thanks, man.
Okay, Christina or Terry, any last thoughts or comments before we close?
No. Just thank you all again.
Nope.
This is really, really helpful, and we're relying on you guys. So keep it up.
Okay, thank you. And just as a reminder, if you were not able to submit or provide your public comments via the phone, we do have an email address that you can submit your public comments there. Thank you, and we look forward to having you join us next week, March 7th, for the next USCDI Task Force.
Thank you.
And we will adjourn. Thank you, everyone.
Have a good evening.
Thanks,
thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.